This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots to talk about on this beautiful weekend. It's really great weather here in New York. It is into the 60s. And hey, isn't this December? Isn't this just a few days before Christmas? Well, we're enjoying even warmer temperatures than the West Coast. And this morning I took a glorious run, had really good morning because, well, it's warm. It's really nice here in New York City, and I hope it's nice wherever you are, and we're going to make it even nicer with health information. 888-302-3684 is our number, and we will share some important stories with you. A new report finds that there's a 43% increase in ADHD diagnosis for U.S. school children, so what's up with that? Also, they're urging us to get the whooping cough vaccine, but does it really protect people? Well, there's actually some new information about that. 888-302-3684 and many other stories, plus your comments, your questions. We invite you to call us right now. Okay, this is an important story. A common treatment for prostate cancer may double the risk of Alzheimer's disease, researchers reported just this Monday. It's a type of therapy called androgen deprivation therapy, and it's another way of referring to it is chemical castration. In fact, in the old days of prostate cancer therapy, back in the dark ages, they didn't have these medications that could block testosterone, so they literally castrated men. And they found that perhaps they did a little better. It may have slowed the progression of their advanced metastatic prostate cancer. Now they use forms of chemical castration with drugs like Lupron and Casodex, and these are popular forms of treatment. But in a study of more than 16,000 men being treated for prostate cancer, it showed that those who got any kind of androgen deprivation therapy had nearly twice the risk of developing Alzheimer's over the next 2.5 years as men getting other treatments. And so, wow, that's pretty scary. What's up with that? Well, those treated for more than a year had more than twice the risk of Alzheimer's. And what it seems to be related to is the same phenomenon by which women report that at the time of menopause, they have decreased memory. They become forgetful, but maybe just a little bit forgetful, not Alzheimer's forgetful, but they have trouble with recall because their hormones have dropped. But they haven't dropped as dramatically as the men who receive hormone blockade. Those hormones are completely wiped out. And it turns out that testosterone may have something to do not just with erections, but general joie de vivre, a will to live, motivation, memory, and focus. And we now know that men who receive this androgen deprivation therapy are also at higher risk for diabetes. Is that a coincidence? Is Alzheimer's a form of diabetes of the brain? Well, there's some evidence to suggest that individuals who have higher levels of blood sugar are at much higher risk of Alzheimer's disease. So is it necessary for all these men to get androgen deprivation therapy? They say that in some instances, men who get androgen deprivation therapy receive it because they're not good candidates for surgical treatment. Maybe they've got serious heart problems. Maybe it's because they haven't responded in the past to mirror surgery. That's another reason to get androgen deprivation therapy, because, well, if the surgery doesn't work and your PSA start going up and metastases appear in your body, you can buy some time with androgen deprivation therapy. But one of the reasons, and I really think they should stop doing this, is that sometimes men have their prostates removed surgically, and they say, well, just in case there's some cancer lingering, we're going to use hormone therapy. Just as sometimes women get Femara, or they get tamoxifen after breast surgery, just in case. Well, the side effects are not as severe. There are side effects associated with Femara and tamoxifen. Some women hate how they feel when they take these hormone blockers. But for men who take androgen deprivation therapy, I've had patients who said, I'd rather die of the prostate cancer than take these drugs because I feel so exhausted, debilitated, and depressed when I take these androgen deprivation therapies. I just don't feel like a man anymore. Well, being a man, a lot of it, is about testosterone. And therefore, this is something that we really have to rethink, that this aggressive treatment with hormone blockade may be dangerous for many men. And even given this type of therapy, it turns out that men who get their prostate surgically removed and then take hormone-based treatments don't live any longer, but they do get more time before the cancer and its symptoms come back. Well, what does that suggest? That it does reduce their risk of prostate cancer, but if they don't live any longer, it suggests it increases their risk of other reasons for dying, like cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and dementia. And so real concern here with a prevalent type of therapy that many men receive for prostate cancer. All right, this one is going to be controversial. You know, whenever you get lost and, you know, you're driving around, you're a guy, and you're driving around in a car with your wife or your girlfriend, and they say, well, why don't you stop and ask for directions? You know, the old joke about that is that men never want to stop and ask for directions. It's a point of pride that they will navigate themselves out of a lost situation. They are born navigators. Now, with the advent of GPS and in-car driving guidance systems, maybe this is a moot point, because we always get pointed to our appropriate destination. But in the day prior to GPS, men would always, you know, I took umbrage when a woman would tell me, well, why don't we just roll down the window, ask that guy over there. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to ask that guy for directions. It would be humiliating if I had to ask that guy for directions. Well, here's a study on this phenomenon. Men have a better sense of direction than women, according to a study. I'm sorry, this is true. Men do, it turns out, have a better sense of direction than women. And it's already been well established that men perform better than women when it comes to specific spatial tasks. I can think of one in particular, which is parking a car. You know, some of you women out there may be expert car parkers. That's fine. But in general, on average, men are perhaps a little better at spatial tasks. It's been shown in studies. But here's the interesting part of it. Why is it that men do better on spatial tasks? Well, they did an experiment where women got a drop of testosterone under their tongue. And what happened was quite interesting. They did better on navigation tasks, on finding their way through a maze, than women who did not get that drop of testosterone, suggesting that it may be testosterone that is the biological reason why men's brains do better with navigational tasks. It turns out in the study, men solved 50% more of the tasks than women. And what's up with that? Why should that be? Well, we can explain this in evolutionary terms. In ancient times, men were hunters, and women generally didn't go out hunting for woolly mammoths. They were gatherers. They stayed behind in the village. But there's an interesting wrinkle to this. Researchers have documented that women are better at finding objects locally than men. Now think about it. When was the last time, if you're a guy, that you opened the refrigerator and you stood there with an utterly baffled expression on your face and looked and looked and looked, and you finally ask your wife or your partner, "Where's the butter? I can't find the butter." You know, and meanwhile, all the stuff in the refrigerator is heating up. You're increasing your electric bills. And women, they will immediately go to the refrigerator and find exactly what you're looking for. So when it comes to finding stuff, men a little better at working their way through mazes, women better with local tasks, finding objects locally. So think about it. You know, Columbus, Vasco da Gama, Marco Polo, Lewis and Clark, they were all men. And they navigated their way across the globe. But then again, there was this young gal named Sacagawea, the faithful young Native American guide of Lewis and Clark, who indeed was a woman. And when they were lost, she got them to find their way. So, statistically, yeah, men better navigators than women, but there are exceptions indeed. 888-302-3684 is our number. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Well, back to Intelligent Medicine. 888-302-3684 is our number, and several people are exercising the option to pose questions to me. And by the way, if you decide not to call us now, you can email us your question to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com, and we won't answer you in writing, but we will use your question as grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which you can listen to via drhoffman.com or iTunes. We will answer your questions on the air. All right, let's talk to Steve in Akron, Ohio. How you doing, Steve? How you listening to us this weekend, Steve?
Well, I'm not. I listen to your podcast during the week.
You just happen to know that we're on from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time each weekend, so that's why you're calling.
Exactly.
All right,
yeah,
cool.
And I have a relative, age 84, who has chronic pancreatitis.
Right.
And he's had 3 attacks in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. Now he has to take Creon.
Right. So for our listening audience, what Creon is, it's a powerful pancreatic enzyme. So when your pancreas is messed up, it does not produce enough digestive enzymes to break down protein and fat primarily. That's the function of pancreatic enzymes. So Creon is a powerful pancreatic enzyme that breaks stuff down for you so you absorb your nutrients better. Okay, go ahead.
And the questions relating, should he be avoiding certain foods? And number 2, how can he prevent attacks in the future? And the cause is idiopathic.
Right. Okay, so fancy word, idiopathic, means we've gone through all the possibilities, and we don't know why you have this. and we'll still send you a bill anyway. That's what idiopathic means. And so what are some of the main causes of pancreatitis? Well, it could be caused by high calcium. It could be caused by alcohol intake. It could be caused by various forms of poisoning. It could be caused by a stone lodging in the pancreatic duct. These are common causes of pancreatitis. But in this case, it's a, quote, idiopathic. There may be a reason in terms of a specific food intolerance, and generally I suggest patients with pancreatitis go on a very light diet, light overall in all food groups, in not too many carbohydrates or sugars. That puts stress on the pancreas, not too much in the way of protein because that burdens the pancreas, and especially fat is poorly broken down and can create sort of an insult for the pancreas. So it's a very clean, natural diet, and sometimes juicing can be helpful. That may be a helpful part of a detoxification regimen for the pancreas. But also it's been shown that certain foods may be triggers, and we might have to do a little trial and error. I would certainly eliminate typical triggers like gluten and dairy and some of the more common triggers of food intolerance. But it's been shown that there's a lot of free radical damage in the pancreas. The free radicals chew up the pancreatic tissue, and antioxidants are essential in treating pancreatitis. And so some oral antioxidants, if the person tolerates that, or maybe even some intravenous antioxidants, perhaps some intravenous vitamin C may be helpful along with other helpful nutrients, especially when you can't eat and swallow as much as you'd like. People with pancreatitis often suffer from nausea, and they're intolerant to vitamins. So we sometimes give them vitamin shots to bypass the gastrointestinal tract. Taking probiotics is often helpful, too, because some of the toxins that affect the pancreas and the liver actually come from the gastrointestinal tract. Harmful bacteria proliferate and can create toxicity to the internal organs that are the first to see the backflow, literally, from the gastrointestinal tract. So these are some of the strategies that we might use. Vitamin D may be helpful, but you have to be careful with certain fat-soluble nutrients, not too much in the way of vitamin A, which can be toxic. These are some of the strategies we might use. And acetylcysteine is a potent antioxidant that might be helpful. So these are the kind of patients we like to see because we think we can really make a difference nutritionally. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number for the weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
The future of holistic health is here. Possessing the power to maintain wellness at the cellular level, RegActive is a revolutionary and remarkable new supplement that will transform the future of preventative and restorative health. RegActive features the innovative probiotic strain ME3, a patented probiotic with over 20 years of research proven to naturally stimulate and produce glutathione, the body's master antioxidant. Glutathione is used by all of our cells, especially in the fight against free radicals, environmental toxins, and the effects of aging. Our levels of glutathione decrease dramatically as we age, leaving us very vulnerable to age-related health issues. Revolutionary, remarkable, RegActive. RegActive is from Essential Formulas, renowned for introducing Dr. O'Hara's probiotics to the United States 15 years ago. Look for RegActive at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. 888-302-3684 is the number. This hour or next hour, anytime at all, we'll be happy to answer your questions. But before we get to callers, here's an alarming trend. New report finds 43% increase in ADHD diagnosis for U.S. school children. That is a very scary statistic. In fact, I wrote my first book on ADHD back in the late 1980s. So this is a big problem then. But the prevalence of this condition, attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, has skyrocketed. 12% of U.S. children and teens had a diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in 2011. A number that has jumped by 43% since 2003. Now, you may say, well, why are they talking about 2011? This is 2015. It usually, there's a lag time. It usually takes a while before they compile these statistics. So this means that 5.8 million U.S. children ages 5 to 17 now have this diagnosis. That's really crazy. The prevalence for girls diagnosed with ADHD rose especially dramatically from 4.3% in 2003 to 7.3% in 2011. That's an increase of 55% over an eight-year period. And the girls are catching up with the boys because traditionally boys have been more likely to get a diagnosis of ADHD. So here's what the authors have to say about that trend. By the way, the study was not designed to look at the underlying reasons for such changes. They're just saying it's more common. Quote, we found rising rates of ADHD overall and very sharp jumps in certain subgroups, including adolescents, where it jumped by 52% since 2003. Quote, parents should be made aware of the findings in case they have a child or teenager that should be evaluated for the disorder, which can persist into adulthood. So what they're saying here is, okay, the incidence has gone up, so therefore it's more likely that your child has ADHD. That's not the right message. Because that's crazy. That's sort of saying, well, oh, it's just, it's like an epidemic, and so make sure your kid doesn't have this, and if you think your kid has this, bring them to a doctor who's very likely to make the diagnosis and put your child on Ritalin, Adderall, or any one of many medications now used to treat this condition. That's not the right message. That just merely adds to the epidemic, because this is a subjective diagnosis. I mean, yes, there are objective criteria. Kids are inattentive. They have behavioral difficulties. But part of the reason that the diagnosis is skyrocketing is because of the easy availability of drugs that are designed to basically be chemical straitjackets for kids and performance enhancers. And what this says is that we're failing as a society to raise our kids properly, both from the standpoint of the structure that we give to our kids, the way that we educate our kids, because maybe, just maybe, little boys and little girls are not designed to sit up rigidly in chairs and read and take tests and answer questions all day long. Maybe, just maybe, we have to adapt our educational strategies and our child-rearing strategies to deal with the varying levels of distractedness that some kids have. This is not to mention all the dietary factors that have to do with ADHD, the lack of essential fatty acids, the deficits in magnesium, the blood sugar peaks and valleys that these kids are subject to, the chemicalized diet, which deranges these kids' brains, literally. These chemical additives are crazy makers for kids. There's actually a book entitled Crazy Makers by a woman named Simitachi. It's a classic book, came out in the 90s, about how many of these chemical additives have a deranging effect on neurotransmission in the delicate brains of children. So clearly we got a problem. The answer to the problem isn't to, oh, make sure that your kid doesn't have ADHD and get them treated promptly with medication. The answer lies in finding the underlying causes and undertaking a major program of prevention of behavioral and attention problems in our kid. Feed your kids well. Feed your fetus well. Even in prenatal planning, take care of your diet. Stock up on essential nutrients like omega-3s so that your child's brain will function better when your child is a toddler or a child or a young adolescent. All these influences, very, very important in shaping this epidemic. All right, let's talk to Lou in Bergen County, New Jersey. How you doing, Lou?
Very good. Pleasure to talk to you again, Dr. Hoffman.
My pleasure.
My dad is 95, never been sick, never been to a doctor. Just recently had a left bundle branch block, and he was in the hospital for a couple days, and they put him on amiodarone.
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you this. A left bundle branch block is a very common finding in many people in their 80s and 90s. So the mere finding of a left bundle branch block does not mean that you go into a hospital. So what happened? Was he having a lot of distress or problems?
Well, what happened was he was sitting down. He goes, I'm feeling hot. His head was getting hot, and I checked his pulse, and his pulse was weak, but it was rapid.
Okay.
Okay.
So maybe he had tachycardia, rapid pulse, something like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then so he settled down, and it came back to normal.
Okay, so the reason I'm asking this question is because the last place you want to put an otherwise healthy 95-year-old into, especially if he's had a history of doing really well without medical intervention, is into a hospital. And you see the result. He was placed on a horrible drug. Amiodarone is a terrible drug. It should never be given to a 95-year-old. It's just a horrible, horrible drug with terrible side effects. So what happened?
So what happened was he was on, you know, the loading dose in the hospital. Now he's on 200 milligrams once a day. But what's happening is all the side effects, which you probably know, he's having trouble breathing and is, he has the cough.
Right.
And so I'm thinking, you know, this is not good.
So, you know, I mean, I can't really comment on the particulars of this medical situation, but I think your best bet is really to get him out of the hospital.
He's home now.
Oh, good. Okay, because that place is germ-laden, and that is a place where, you know, between the inattention, the germs in the hospital, the IVs that they put in the arm, the possibility of infections from the IVs, that's a terrible place for a 95-year-old to be. And that would be horrible if he, you know, led a healthy life and he was doing okay, and he ends up in the intensive care unit in the hospital because of some, you know, calamity that is often the case with these older patients. Okay, so he's home. Look, I don't know what to tell you in terms of managing this problem, but things that help, certainly coenzyme Q10 can help, ubiquinol can help, magnesium can help. You have them on those things?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
Now, my question, this was brought on, they told me, I'm doing all the research on high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So he's on a blood pressure med, he's on metoprolol, 25 milligrams a day. I don't know if you can answer it. If he just kept his blood pressure intact, would that stop these attacks of tachycardia?
Yeah, the nice thing about metoprolol is that it's an old-fashioned medication. It's been around for a long time. The side effects are fairly negligible. It keeps blood pressure under control, and it also slows heart rate. Now, the only danger of it is that sometimes older individuals, the heart rate gets slowed too much. It gets too slow. And then ultimately the solution is to put in a pacemaker, which, you know, sounds like a big deal, like a heavy duty intervention, but a lot of folks in their 80s and 90s get pacemakers and they do fine. So I don't know what to tell you, but man, it would certainly be in his interest to get off a nasty drug like amiodarone for this condition.
His pulse is higher.
Okay. Well, there are problems associated with that medication. It's not a great medication. So, you know, try to get the involvement of a nutritionally oriented physician in this. I know it's going to take a cardiologist to do the heavy lifting and the main management, but we want to be really gentle with these older individuals. You know, the big problem in this country is something called polypharmacy, which is multiple medications administered to older individuals who tolerate them poorly. And it's actually one of the major causes of death in America. Yeah, heart attacks, cancer. And then number three or number four are medications. The very medications that we use to treat various conditions ultimately undo us. And therefore, you really want a light touch with these geriatric patients. There are actually doctors who specialize in that. They're geriatricians. They specifically work with older patients, put them on very mild medications, very low doses, get them off of excess medications. There's really an art to treating patients of that age, because look, 95 these days is not such an exceptional age, but you got to be really delicate with those patients, and they do well with proper nutritional support. So make sure you have that component going. Thanks for your call. I really appreciate it. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number, and in a moment we're going to take a look at whooping cough. Why is it making such a comeback? Is it because of the anti-vaxxers, the refuseniks? This is Intelligent Medicine.
As we age, it's important to keep moving. but it doesn't have to hurt. You know, sometimes pain is inevitable, but suffering can be optional. In addition to healthier eating habits and staying active, I've discovered a powerful new formula to help provide nutritional support for healthy inflammation response. Kyolic Curcumin from our friends at Kyolic. Kyolic Curcumin is a synergistic combination of the antioxidant properties of odorless organic aged garlic extract, along with a proprietary Mariva turmeric complex made from a unique blend of curcumin and phosphatidylcholine to help maximize absorption. I take Kyolic Curcumin every day to provide natural support for healthy inflammation response, joint and muscle health, cardiovascular benefit, colon and liver function, as well as other nutritional benefits. So take the first step with Kyolic Curcumin. The rest is easy.
Kyolic Curcumin is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. For more information, visit kyolic.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Huffman with you. 888-302-3684. This hour, next hour, we got lots of time to answer your questions. And this item has to do with, have you seen the ads on TV for the whooping cough vaccine, the pertussis vaccine, not just for kids? Kids get it routinely. But now they're saying that if you are a responsible parent, or especially they're aiming this at grandparents, you know, grandparents, they're putting a guilt trip on grandparents because grandparents are going to go over to their kid's house and want to hold the baby. But there's a danger that they may transmit pertussis or whooping cough, which can be a deadly disease, to their grandchild. So what responsible grandparent would want to forego a vaccine that could save their grandchild so much misery? They illustrate it with a cartoon character, the big bad wolf, who is at the door, and he represents the whooping cough, and you can protect the little piggies from the whooping cough with the vaccine. And also, there's an argument that the anti-vaxxers, the people who are against vaccination, you know, there's a vaccine autism connection, and people are campaigning against vaccination. There's a lot of skepticism about vaccination. Well, they're saying that's the problem. And clearly, whooping cough has made an astonishing comeback. In 2012, there were nearly 50,000 infections in the U.S. That's the most since 1955. So what's up with that? By the way, the death rate in infants also three times that of the rest of the population. So we're particularly concerned because infants don't get the whooping cough vaccine right away. They're unprotected. So this dramatic resurgence has puzzled health officials, and they're blaming it on the anti-vaccine sentiment that is sweeping America, especially in kind of upscale, affluent communities, people well-educated. They pay a lot of attention to the media. They hear the anti-vaccine message, and therefore they're not vaccinating their kids. And they blame the uptick in whooping cough on this lapse in vaccination. But that may not be the whole story, according to a new study published in BMC Medicine. Their research points to a different but related source of the outbreak, which is people who are vaccinated, but who are infectious. So this is kind of crazy. Well, how could someone who's vaccinated be infectious? It turns out that the vaccine does a pretty good job of preventing you from getting whooping cough, but it doesn't prevent you from carrying the virus. Now, if you're coughing and hacking and you decide to visit your grandchild, that's not a good idea. But if you are asymptomatic, you may not know, and the vaccine, it turns out, isn't going to help you very much. It's really interesting because the vaccine is imperfect. There literally could be millions of people out there with either just a minor cough or no symptoms whatsoever spreading this dangerous disease, because it's not about the refuseniks who are not taking the vaccine. Don't blame them. It's about the inefficacy of the vaccine. So research needs to be undertaken to come up with better, certainly safer vaccines, because, you know, once again, I'm not saying don't vaccinate your child, But keep in mind that we can't blame the anti-vaxxers for the current epidemic. They're using this uptick in whooping cough cases as a cudgel to encourage people to get vaccinated. But that's not the answer. The answer is, let's find better vaccines. And I'll have more to say on the flu vaccine in hour two of today's Intelligent Medicine, because it's an interesting couple of stories on the flu vaccine that I want to share with you. Okay, so let's talk about diet beverages. Diet beverages have now been shown to be ineffective for weight loss. That kind of doesn't make sense, because if you're slugging down Cokes and Pepsis and sugary drinks, and you just substitute one for one diet cola or diet Snapple, less calories, you should be losing weight, right? Well, not according to the latest study on this, which is in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. The title of the study is Effects on Weight Loss in Adults of Replacing Diet Beverages with Water During a Hypoenergetic Diet. Hypoenergetic diet means it's a low-calorie diet, right? You should lose weight on a low-calorie diet. So they said, well, let's compare two groups on this. They're both getting a diet, low-calorie diet, and one's drinking water, and one's taking diet drinks. And what do you think happened? Well, theoretically, there's the same amount of calories in a diet drink as in water. So you would think, well, at least the folks on this low-calorie diet who are undergoing deprivation as it is are getting their jollies drinking lots of diet soda. I remember part of Dr. Atkins' program was to allow people to drink diet soda. As long as you were in ketosis on a very, very low-carb diet, you could drink diet soda to your heart's content. But it turns out that is not the case, because replacement of diet beverages with water led to greater weight reduction during this weight loss program. It lasted for 24 weeks. And why is it? It just may be that even though there are no calories, there's no sugar in diet soda, that it does something to perpetuate insulin resistance. It may do so two ways. One, it sends a signal to your brain when you take in something sweet that something sugary is coming down your gastrointestinal tract, and that just may change your insulin levels, may increase them. Another alternative explanation is that you may mess up your intestinal bacteria with the corrosive substances in diet soda, and that the microbiome, we now know, plays a role in regulating our metabolism. It's a very interesting study suggesting that diet soda doesn't really work when it comes to aiding weight loss. That was the contention for so long. It's now proven not the case. All right, here's an item that suggests that if you are undergoing an operation, make sure they play nice music for you. Because, well, they've already undertaken programs where they play nice classical music in the operating room. Well, it depends on the surgeon you have. Your surgeon is a rock aficionado. He may want to hear Led Zeppelin during the surgery. That's not very restful for you, but maybe that'll get your surgeon to be more happy during the surgery. But according to the study, a meta-analysis reveals that the use of music before and after surgery reduces post-operative pain and anxiety and increases patient satisfaction and may speed healing. Very, very interesting study. So make sure next time that you get surgery, you get some classical music, some nice, restful, melodious sounds to facilitate your recovery. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.